As I was saying, this is a really difficult place to be sitting. It didn't seem intimidating when I was sitting on my zafu, but it's really intimidating for me to sit up here. So that said, I'll just go on as I have all week, acting as if. I spoke to Angie earlier, just asking her for a little more background on Pari Nirvana Sishin, and she said it was in Zen we celebrate every occasion of Buddha's life at a different time, and she said it was an excuse to have a Sishin, unlike other Buddhist groups. And this one is celebrating, she said, Buddha's death and the deaths of other teachers, our personal teachers, as she mentioned, and also celebrating the continuation of the teaching. And maybe we could say embodying the continuing tradition, the continuing teaching, or even the awakening that's come down. I really haven't been reading much, but I picked up that new book by Judy. She gave me a copy, and I just opened it up to a very auspicious place. It was at Pari Nirvana Sishin. He was talking on the first day. And he said that Buddha's last words as he was dying to his disciples were these: "It is occurring every second to everybody, everywhere, as long as they exist. It is occurring every place, everywhere." Sometimes, in situations that we get in, that we are in, words really strike a chord, and especially when you feel like that's the perfect one that you needed to hear. And I think I was talking last time, I was talking about, I think, a particular encounter with Koban, but I also said it was the place, the time, and just right, the right then of it, and the way he was with me at that moment, when he spoke to me, and how it he was just a mirror for a completely okay, perfect person. It was me. I was okay anyway. It was not perfect, and in spite of all my everythings. And but we have other examples from ancient teachers, and our teachers use examples in their teaching from, you know, the old guys, usually, except for in the new book Angie was part of, The Hidden Lamp, which was all about women's stories. But there are guys, and they have passed down stories about just little encounters that some of them feel like you had to be there. But then again, they leave so much room for pondering and finding the situation. So, and each time a teacher passes it down, you get the whole teacher with it, their words and the whole teaching, real life teaching. And I very much believe that we have to have our real life teacher to study Zen. not a faraway teacher that we never see, a real life teacher that we actually meet with. And I was up without that for quite a while. And I stopped sitting. And that was before Coben died. That was just when Coben left. I sort of somehow had the idea, I really think I did have the idea, well, now it's time to do something else, and sort of, you know, like my practice will be getting a job for a change and supporting my daughter, you know. And so I did that. And then the sitting just dropped off. I mean, I don't know what happens. 10, 15 years pass. I don't know what happens to that time without a teacher. And then I was injured. My friend, a lot of our friend, Glenna, I was staying in Los Altos Hills and sort of literally laid up. I was just in bed in this house on top of the hills. And Glenna brought me a bunch of Buddhist books, and I started reading them. And I started sitting again. It's funny because I couldn't sit in a chair for years and years and years. But I found that I could sit on a zafu because I was so practiced at it from way back. And my posture, as you know, it's the posture for sitting. And everything works when you're in that posture. And I didn't feel pain. I only sat for about 5 minutes at a time. I did lying meditation. And she also brought me Thich Nhat Hanh's walking meditation book. And I... We lived with this man, Jim, who was a caretaker. Balin was staying with him while they worked, and I ended up staying the summer there. And I just walked through the grass, the unmowed grass. I couldn't walk too far because I wasn't supposed to go uphill. So I just walked around this quite large ranch house. I mean, it took, seems like 10 minutes, or you know, probably 20 minutes to slowly walk around it. And... doing the walking meditation, and I followed the instructions one page at a time. And so you only get, the way the book is laid out, or used to be, you only get this much at a time, and then a beautiful picture on the other side. So I just did that little bit for that, and I do that several times a day, and then I'd add another little bit. And that became my meditation. And it was really wonderful meditation. Being in that place really helped. And being with absolutely nothing else to do really helped, too. By the time we left, I had made this real path in this grass that was this high, you know, and I made this path all around the outside, all around the perimeter of the house, you know, the garden grounds of the house, and then all the rest was open space district. And I didn't get to venture there until the very end because there were hills. But so I guess that's when I started sitting again, when I really couldn't sit at all. And eventually I couldn't work, and we moved to San Diego, and then I started looking for a Zen group. Coben was still alive. I don't know why I didn't think of getting in a plane and going to see Coben. I really wasn't in touch with the group. I thought Coben had just left and wasn't coming back. And then I heard later that he was coming back and giving talks here occasionally. And Glenna also told me that Angie was here. And I go, huh, that's interesting. But it wasn't until... So I went to a couple of Zen teachers in San Diego, and it just wasn't, you know, the right fit, and wasn't Coben. And then he died, and I was stunned, as all of us were, I think. And I heard about his funeral. I heard about his death, and then about his funeral service up here, and then I heard Angie might be here. And... So I came up and saw it. We didn't speak, but we bowed to each other on the path, I remember. And there was Angie standing up in front. And I was sitting on a zafu, and they chanted the Heart Sutra over and over and over in Japanese, you know, and I was just sobbing and snot running over my face. It was not pretty. But still, the chanting of the Heart Sutra was really opened something that was so closed in a personal, private grief and loss. So the whole ceremony there and chanting and then talking to old friends, you know, friends, you know, a lot of ones that are, a few of them anyway, are here now that I hadn't seen for so long. So they started listening to talks on the computer by Angie. Oh my gosh, she's really got it going on, you know? Wow. And so eventually, with my still feeble back, I made my way up here to my first session with Angie. And I lay down for a bit of it. And then I found, and then I'd take off and walk for a bit of it. I just gave myself a certain amount of time. I don't like to let myself guess what time I'm going to get up or give myself that kind of choice, because I'd be getting up any old time. So I'd make a period where I would walk, or a period where I would go lie down. And then I got, by the end of the session, I was sitting almost all the sittings, and that was like a revelation that I could actually sit a session. And the floating Zendo people were so kind. So kind and understanding. It just was just a fine place to be. And it was way different from Jikoji as I remembered it. That's another story though. So I have a couple stories. I wasn't even knowing I was going to say that, but a couple examples of teachings from Koban that struck me, and then I didn't, I'm not going to say understand them, because it's just a process, but they start to mean more to me, but I was struck when I first heard them. So Koban was telling a story of a young monk, you know, and at the monastery, and he was getting very frustrated with his sitting, right? And he was just not getting anywhere, and he thought he was no good. He was just so frustrated. This is probably after years. Finally, one night, he just set out in the dark with probably just his staff, and that's probably all he had. And he tripped on a rock, you know, stubbed his toe horribly, in the midst of going, probably, oh, shoot, he noticed the pain, and he asked himself, where does this pain come from? And according to Koban, at that moment, he was greatly awakened. And he went back to his teacher and said, I was wrong before, and now I'd like to study with you. So it was a great story, and I was in a very cynical mood at the time. Balin was gone, and I think I was kind of mad at him. And so when he said that, I said, so this enlightenment, how long did that last? Kind of like that, you know? And he said, like, look at me, like, really surprised. He said, it is still going on. And I was like, oh. And then he went on to tell me you know, you shouldn't think badly of people when they're gone. And he did that sometimes, of course. So, and then he said, what's wrong? You're looking white as a ghost. So I'll always remember that one. And it comes to me quite often lately at Sashin's. I mean, it's sort of obvious, you know. So especially if you come to a sesshin and you feel like you were just there staring at that wall, and it, indeed it's still going on. So that's been helpful for me. And I'm going to read again the first thing I read that starts with an it. Notice. It is occurring every second to everybody, everywhere, as long as they exist. It is occurring every place, everywhere. So I read that just last night with the flashlight just shot right on that. And I go, oh yeah, it's still going on. Buddha's last words, the continuing awakening, is still going on. And here we are, getting frustrated, everything else, enjoying ourselves, serving each other tea, making great cookies, all that. So other words of Koban also led me to go find a new teacher, and it was right the night of the funeral. A friend from Santa Cruz, we've been trying to get the tapes of Koban's talks from Santa Cruz, and we've only really retrieved a few. And our friend Karen found one. She had it, several, and she couldn't find the other ones. But on it, he told the story of Tozan. And that's a story that we know, and of course I had to struggle with for years and years, and still am. Don't get that one at all. The poem, I'm trying to do it literally, and I can't remember the poem anyway, so I'm not going to try even to do that for you. What I'm interested in is the words that Tozan said to his teacher, Unmin or Unman. He said, when you're gone, and somebody asks me, what was his teaching, what will I say? This was on the tape I listened to the night of the funeral. I didn't know. And of course, there was all the regret not having asked the right questions or not having been there. So I worked with that question, and I had memories, different memories of Koban, and I just wrote them down, just little, teeny little images, really. And I later put them in a little book I made, a little chat book, and I actually gave it to Angie the first time I came to that sesshin, that first sesshin I came to with Angie, because it had to be understood. It had to be at least read by someone who understood. There were few, you know, at that time that I was connected with that would know the whole thing. I think just Balin and Angie that I was in touch with. So it doesn't have a definitive answer. It's more a lot of little scenes and questions. But that's it. That's what we're going to get. And that seems to be the end of my talk. I know some of your teachers might be on that. What the name of is, I can't remember. Chest up back there of the teachers who have passed on, as well as family. And I thought maybe you, some of you, would have some short words about your teacher, something you remember. You may not quite understand, but it keeps coming back. While you're thinking, I just remembered I asked Angie the same question when she had the, is that called the Minju ceremony?
Minju.
Minju, when you ask questions to a teacher, and it was very formal at first. Angie! When you're gone, and someone asked me, what was your teaching? What will I say? I got it wrong. I said, what will I say? Instead of what should I say? And she said, well, I don't know what you will say. Probably just something that comes right into your head at the moment. And then she said, but I would say my teaching to you would be just sit and keep sitting and keep sitting. And when you're tired of sitting, just keep on sitting some more. So that's my other teacher. Any comments, actually, would be fine.
One of the teachers in the
circle, Kaisendo.
Kaisendo. I've been trying to think of a wonderful story from Darlene, but the one that came into mind was actually something from Steve Stuckey and his practice of awakening every morning in generosity. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I've carried with me since I heard that he just brings that into his life the minute he comes mm-hmm. awake. Mm-hmm. And he so personified that. It was mm-hmm. such an incredible man.
Thank you. One of his students, Christine Palmer, very, very kindly and patiently for, 6 hours, when I first arrived at Zen Center with my fabric, helped me measure and start cutting out my robe, my priest robe. Yeah.
I just want to join in with that. Steve was absolutely wonderful. He was the only priest from any Zen center that has ever come and sat with my groups that meet on the streets. Mm-hmm. And he sat there with a big smile. And he said, call me Abbot Steve, because he was the leader at the time. Just so open and so warm that everybody that was there just loved him. He was wonderful. Rather like Darlene.